WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. You are listening to The Big Picture, Halloween edition. I am Shay Spillane. With me, as always, is my illustrious co-host, Mr. Derek Gary.
Hi there.
We're going to be here with you till 9 o'clock if you want to give us a call at 855-915-WMFO. And we are mixing things up. Oh, yes, please throw more Reese's peanut butter cups at me. Jesus Cristo, that's like the best thing anyone's ever thrown at me. Usually it's beer bottles or curses, which we don't say on the air here, which is one of the hardest things of my life. But so it's Halloween, so we're mixing things up a little bit. Not our usual format. But now we're talking about our favorite scary movies.
Yeah. Yeah, because once the trick-or-treaters are done, what are you doing? You're putting on a horror movie, right?
I mean, Oh, yeah, totally.
That's the next big thing to do on Halloween. And for those of you who tuned in last week, no giallo. I'm not putting any giallo on my list. So you don't have to worry about that. You're not going to hear any of that. We spent all last week talking about giallo. It was great. But none of that.
Yeah, time. I was going to say, I missed you all. I wasn't here last week.
Yeah, well, you were out partying. So...
I was. My dad's speech made me cry, by the way.
What makes a good scary movie, Shay? What are you into?
I'm a student of Hitchcock.
All right.
I don't like the torture porn type.
You're not an Eli Roth movies. Fan, is what you're saying.
Yeah, like I like Saw and Hostel, all of that. I think that I took a class on Hitchcock when I was in college, and one of his like main baseline principles was that suspense is the key to terrifying somebody. So,
and have sex with your actresses.
With your actresses and berate them to the point that they almost have nervous breakdowns. Hmm. Those are the second two. It's just like anything else in life, like less is more. Like having it instead of thrusting, thrusting the terrifyingness in someone's face, you just kind of tease them with it and let the mind wander. That being said, I am also a huge fan of like super campy, cheesy. Like I'm like a fan of like the other end of that, which is the gore is almost funny. So it's you can't even. You know, like you can't even be that scared or disgusted by it because you're just like, oh, that's pretty good. She just got killed by an automatic garage door.
To me, it's
which
all,
is a reference to one of the movies I'm going to bring up.
To me, it's all about how you build suspense. You know,
and, yeah, totally.
And it's, if I can see an easy way out for the character, if I'm watching this and I'm like, oh, nothing's going to happen to that person, then it's done, and I've got no interest in watching your movie. The movies I love and the ones that I will watch over and over and over again, because everything on this list I have seen, with one exception, at least 20 times.
Oh, yeah. Me too. All of the movies that I have.
If not annually since I was a teenager. And it's because there is something in all of them that I'm just like, this either builds great suspense or it has something to say or it's doing something fun. So we've each picked 10, Shay. There may be some overlap here.
Yes. Are we starting? So I have mine in from like the last one I have is my favorite.
Okay. So you're going in the opposite direction. We're going from the
so from favorite down?
No, from least favorite to favorite.
Okay. That's what. Okay. Cool. Well, in that case, I'm going to start with Children of the Corn.
Hmm. I remember seeing that in the theater.
That movie is just so... sometimes it moves a bit slow, but especially I think that the reason that I was like attracted to this movie in the first place was having driven through like Nebraska and Kansas. And the whole time that I was driving, without having ever seen this movie, by the way, the whole time I was sitting there being like, there's something... very creepy about that I'm just driving by corn stalks, especially knowing that anyone could just appear out of them at any moment.
That's a very young Alec Baldwin in that movie, isn't it?
Oh my goodness, like super like, oh no, wait, is it Alec Baldwin? No, it's that other dude.
That Alec Baldwin-esque dude?
The guy who's like got the charisma of Alec Baldwin, his hair is a bit lighter. I'm trying to think of his name.
It's in here somewhere.
I'm going to say, the kid that plays the Shermanator in the American Pie movies is one of the terrifying children, which I find hilarious.
I know who I was thinking of who was in this. It is a very young Linda Hamilton who is in this.
Yes. And, oh, the guy who's in it is the guy from Wings.
Yeah. Yeah. That, God, what the heck is his name? And why isn't he in here? I don't know. It's, you know, yeah. Opening scene of that movie is horrifying.
Yes.
After the opening of that movie, it just kind of peters out for me, but...
I would say, well, that's the thing, is that it peters, and then, like, that's...
And it does bring it back around again at the end.
Well, that's kind of what's great about it, is that, like I said, like, I like movies that build the suspense, that builds, that it's like, just when you're feeling calm, or just when you're feeling like everything's going to be okay, all of a sudden someone gets killed with what do you call those things that they use? A prop tool?
A sickle.
Sickle, yeah. Someone gets killed with a sickle.
Or a scythe, yeah.
Scythe, that's what I was thinking. Yeah.
I think they were using actual sickles in that, and it was like, that's what's in the cover, because when it's handheld, it's a sickle. When it's on a pole, it's a scythe.
Hardware. Like it's definitely like I said, like it drags at times, but that almost adds to the suspense because you're like, okay, it's very quiet. Maybe something's gonna happen. No, everything's fine. No, I think it's too quiet. Like it's definitely a classic example of that.
I will say, having seen that in the theater when it first came out, the kids putting the old man's hand in the meat slicer was with me for years. That was with me for years. I was like, ooh, that was.
Oh my God, it's terrible.
Number 10 for me, not a traditional horror movie, and this is the only one on my list that isn't. It's a film called Threads. From 1984.
Threads.
This was.
I've seen that.
This was the United Kingdom's answer to The Day After. It is shot documentary style, although it is fiction, about nuclear war in Sheffield and what happens afterward. Not only is the nuclear attack scene horrifying and terrifying, but you then get to spend another hour and 15 or so minutes watching society completely fall apart and die off. And it's just bleak and hopeless. And this was the BBC's third go around on doing something like this. There are two other films that are predecessors to Threads, one from the 1960s, one from the 1970s, that all touch on similar themes of like, folks, if this happens, it's all over, basically.
Yeah.
And they go through all of the science of it. And they explain exactly how it is that everybody's going to die. And it's just, it will scare the living hell out of you. Because the thing about that movie is this could actually happen. And with Doctor Who being said...
Which I always think is a really good element to horror movies as well. Is like, I like it better than when there's like a zombie or something. You know, when there's something like, this is something to actually be scared about.
And with Doctor Who being set in Sheffield now, there's even more reason to watch it.
So I can't believe I just said zombie, and now I'm going to say my next one. My next couple are, I don't even know if you technically consider them horror movies, because they're also other stuff. They'd also fall into other genres, but the movie What Lies Beneath always sticks through to me. For those of you who don't remember that, it's Harrison Ford and Michelle Pfeiffer. And it's one of those movies where there's so much calm through the movie that it's unnerving, like because enough scary things happen that you're just on the edge of your seat, even though at times things seem very docile. But that's one of the first movies that I ever saw multiple times in the theater. Like I went to see it. I think it came out when I was maybe 12. And I went to see it and was like, nah, I gotta go see this again.
That was a late entry in the women in peril genre. There were a whole bunch of those women being like menaced by boyfriends or husbands or, you know, significant others. And that was one of the last ones that came out. And it is a ghost story.
Oh,
and it's
absolutely
a horror movie. And
I was gonna say, because that's what it's so hard to generally categorize.
Maybe it's not a ghost story. You know, that's the thing with that movie.
I was gonna say, well, that's the thing, is it's so hard to like generally characterize a movie, because like you could call it a horror movie, or you could call it a thriller, or you could call it, you know, there are so many different elements to it, which I think is another, we were talking about like what we look for in scary movies. I think that's another element, is having some character development, having some aspects that have nothing to do with being scared the entire time. You know, like there's like a bit where she's chatting with her friend and it's like her friend is so super cool and she has nothing to do with the scary aspects of it, but it helps develop the characters. It helps it. And that's why, I mean, now, God, now I'm talking about it, I really want to watch that movie now. no matter what, if Michelle Pfeiffer's in it, it's going to be a good movie.
We're at number nine, right?
Yeah.
Number nine for me is High Tension. Have you ever seen High Tension?
No.
This is a, this is a 2003 French film by Alejandra Aja, who did the Piranha remake and did Horns.
Yeah.
And in the early 2000s, right around the turn of the century, there was this explosion of ultra-violent French cinema. And he was one of the leading forces in that. This film is ridiculous because on the surface, it's about, you know, a girl going to spend the weekend at her friend's house. And then this serial killer shows up and just starts brutalizing everybody. Once this movie starts going, it does not let go of you. Imagine the final chase in Texas Chainsaw Massacre lasting for about an hour and a half, and that's what High Tension is.
Oh my God.
It is bloody, it is unrelenting, it has an incredible shock twist at the end of it. If you haven't seen it, it's highly recommended, but you really got to be into gore, and you really got to be into, you know, constantly having horrific images thrown in front of you.
All over the place.
It's a film that a lot of people look at and they're like, I just can't take this. It's too much. And it is. It is all about the excess with this film. But it is so superbly constructed.
I would say that's the thing. Even if it's super gory, which is not my thing, if it's done really remarkably well, I respect it. It's just like, I'm not super into romantic comedies, but if it's a really good romantic comedy and done very well, I'll be like, all right, maybe I'll watch that. Like, there's a reason I own the VHS and the DVD of Love Actually.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. And it's there's some lesbian overtones to it if you're looking for some representation.
Oh, that really leads into mine.
Yeah. But you know, you're not going to be paying attention to that. You're going to be like, "Oh my God, what the hell is happening?"
Everything's terrifying. Well, I was going to say that actually leads into my next choice, which bit of a curveball out of left field, but I love this movie. Jennifer's Body.
Mm.
Have you seen this movie?
Yes, I have.
It's at times it's just hilarious, but definitely a horror movie, while still being like kind of cute high school whatever. And I think that like the casting of Amanda Seyfried as like the dorky best friend, and Slutty McSlutterson, I forget her name, Megan Fox as the super hot popular chick, who ends up becoming a cannibal and something of a demon, essentially, is like so brilliant. Like their juxtaposition is great, and it's, again, like I said, it's can definitely be categorized as a horror movie, while also just like you laugh through half of it, and they intend that. That's the important part. Like they intend for you to be like kind of giggling at the, like, even I forget, like she stabs her, she does something to her, and Jennifer, like Amanda Seyfried's character, who's Needy, that's her name, but she, I think she stabs her or something, Jennifer or something, and she goes, my tit. Like it's all just like very like they're kind of just like going to, yeah, like all of it, and it's just wildly entertaining for like as someone who likes comedies, campy horror movies, and just horror movies in general. Like it hits every spot.
Number eight for me, I had to put some David Cronenberg on the list. And for me, if you're going to watch one David Cronenberg film, I think the one to watch is Videodrome, because it is in its own way the most accessible of his early films, and his later films kind of veer out of what he was best at when he was younger, which is body horror with massive sexual overtones to it. In Videodrome, James Woods turns into a human VCR. And the sexual overtones of that...
Oh my God, I need to see this movie.
The sexual overtones of that are obvious before you even get into all of the S&M that's on screen, Debbie Harry, bodies exploding, and all the other stuff that goes on. It is a film that has an awful lot to say. And a film that is still 100% relevant today in the things that it has to say about our entertainment culture and the way that we let... entertainment sort of manipulate us and control us. And if anything, some of what he says in this film, if you apply it to all of the tracking and surveillance that's happening on the internet, is more relevant than ever. And it's a damn good horror story on top of that. It's got all the blood and guts that you need. It's got some great, great scary moments in it, and just all of the David Cronenberg hallmarks built into it. I think it's one of the best things that he ever did.
I really want to go see this movie now.
Yeah, it's good. It's worth seeing for James Woods alone.
I mean, James Woods is fantastic. I love that he does his own voice and is an entire character on Family Guy. And he dies on Family Guy.
This is young, sexy James Woods, too.
So the next one is actually, so it's two movies that are one and the same. Are actually very different, but the same movie. For me, it's Texas Chainsaw Massacre. You were talking about that earlier. The 70s version, definitely scary, but again, similar to Jennifer's Body, where at some points it's you kind of laugh.
It doesn't work for me.
And
the thing about it is, I understand exactly why Tobe Hooper made all those choices and how it's constructed to disorient and frighten the audience. But it never worked for me.
The main reason I included this on the list is the remake is, to this day, the most terrifying movie I've ever seen. They hit just every possible amount of, sheer human exhaustion. Exhaustion is not the word I'm looking for, but just, there's a scene where... spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it and want to, don't listen to me right now.
The girl is under the table and the chainsaw is coming through the top of the table.
No, even worse, when one of the guys is strung up like meat and has had his legs cut off.
Oh, yeah.
And they put a bag of salt on the bottom of the wound. And I don't remember any of their names, but Justin Timberlake's wife, Jessica Biel, her character discovers him like this, and he says, please kill me. Please, please kill me. I can't take it. I can't take this anymore. And she kills him. And it's just the way that they really tap into, human desperation. That's the word I'm looking for. Human desperation and finally just coming to terms with... I mean, I remember when I watched that scene, it made me think of... it made me think of the Charles Manson murders, when Abigail Folger said to one of the women that was stabbing her, just take me, I'm already dead. It's the sheer just loss of will to live. I've never seen that illustrated better than, and I don't even really like that movie, to be honest with you, because like I said, I hate that torture porn stuff, but it was so well done and so illustrated so well, that last moment of just of giving up. Even the opening scene when they pick up the hitchhiker and she's got a gun stashed somewhere we can't talk about on the radio, but and then blows her brain. From the very beginning of the movie, you're just sitting there being like, this is like being treated so terribly, you'd rather die than go on living. And that, I think, is the epitome of what it is to be terrified of horror.
Coincidentally, that movie came out the same year as High Tension.
Oh, really?
And if you like one, you will like the other. Although I will say that High Tension is about survival against...
Whereas Texas Chainsaw Massacre is about, please just kill me now.
Yeah, yeah. In High Tension, there's never any question that your protagonist wants to live and is trying to escape. But as the horrors build, you begin to wonder if you could ever escape from that.
Yeah.
Whereas I agree with you. Texas Chainsaw Massacre gets to a point where it's okay.
Yeah, it's I'd rather be dead than experience this anymore.
This is America in the new millennium. Number seven for me is, I'm sure, one of Shay's personal favorites, The Exorcist. I don't need to say.
I was going to say, I actually purposely left that off my list because I need to say it.
Yeah. And you can make the argument that it should be higher on the list. Maybe. But I got some good stuff in here. The Exorcist builds tension better than any movie that I've ever seen. And it goes to that shot of the doorway. And every time you go to that shot of the doorway, you're like, don't go in there. Don't open the door. Please don't. No, there's bad stuff in there. Because every time you go on the other side of that door.
What are you doing?
Every time you go on the other side of that door, it gets worse.
Well, and I mean, beyond the fact that The Exorcist is obviously a brilliant and terrifying movie. I love too that it was filmed at Georgetown and at Fordham.
Yep.
So I went to Fordham, as I think our listeners know. And it's weird to see, like, it was filmed in one of the, like, a large amount of the scenes were filmed in one of the dorms at Fordham that's been there since 1848. But one of the most famous scenes where the priest falls down the stairs.
Georgetown.
Is it Georgetown? Not only is it at Georgetown, my sister used to sprint up and down those stairs to train for crew when she went to Georgetown. And, like, I remember the first time I went to visit her being like, we gotta go down those stairs. Like, you gotta take me to the stairs. we need to do this. But it's just so funny watching the movie and being like, hey, I know there.
There is a movement afoot now to make that a national, put it on the National Register of Historic Places.
Oh, no way. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, the funny thing is the bottom of the stairs, gas station.
Yeah.
And then the Potomac's across the street. But it was just like, that's what I love about, I mean, I've always loved about going places that movies were filmed, is finding out things like that. Like, I think I've talked about when I lived in Los Angeles, I lived downtown near the Arts District, and there was this warehouse that I'd always drive by, and I'd be like, I don't know why, I'm just like attracted to this warehouse, and it said it was for lease upstairs. So I was like, I don't know, I want to like get people together, maybe we can all live in this warehouse. I don't know what it is about this place. And it turns out that, first of all, it was the outdoor scenes of Patty's Pub on Always Sunny in Philadelphia. But then after I realized that, so many shows that I watched, I realized it's just used, because it's just a giant brick building, but it's used like in Parks and Recreation. I've seen it in like a ton of different television shows, and just been like, huh. And it's just an abandoned crappy warehouse, like, that's near a restaurant I like. But yeah, that's always very interesting. Okay, so next up for me, I'll keep it classic for you. Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Rosemary's Baby is...
Came this close to making my list.
I mean, first of all, Mia Farrow is just...
Delicious.
I'm straight as the day is long, but I just look at her and I'm like, I could just stare at you all day.
She launched the pixie cut.
Oh, I was going to say, absolutely in that movie, like, she invented the pixie cut. Yeah. It was like that generation version of the Rachel from the 90s.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. But that movie, again, first of all, I love... Well, it's funny, too, that I was just mentioning the Manson murders, and that is obviously a... oh, my God, why is his name escaping me right now? Roman Polanski movie.
Yes.
But it's one of the things that I really love, like, on each end of the spectrum of horror movies, is that so much of it, it's like, it's nothing scary is happening, but the anticipation, the level of just like, you know, something's going to happen, and it just keeps you on the edge of your seat being like, when's it going to happen? When's it going to happen? When's it going to happen? And oh God, did they deliver on that movie. I remember the first time I saw it just being like, I saw it for the first time very recently, actually. And that's coming from a film major who loves horror movies. But I remember, I think I saw it for the first time maybe 5 years ago, and I was like, how have I not been watching this movie since I was a teenager? Like, but it's brilliant.
The interesting thing about it is you can read that movie up until the end. You can read that movie simply as a young woman doesn't fit in with high society.
Yeah. Or, you know? Or like a young woman is not handling being pregnant well.
Yeah. And it's like the movie gives you all of those outs, you know, where you're like, is this in her mind? Is this really happening?
Yeah, like, is she just crazy? Is she...
And then you get to the final act, and it's like, oh, it's worse than you thought.
I was like, oh, she's actually totally sane and was right this entire time.
Yeah.
But yeah, that movie, I mean, it's really, there's a reason. I forget if it won an Academy Award. It won something. But
oh, it won a bunch of awards.
I would say it won a ton of stuff, and rightfully so, because it's just, it's a brilliant movie. And like I said, Mia Farrow, get it.
Yeah. Number six for me, I'll give you a choice of three. And these are any one of Lucio Fulci's Gates of Hell films. And those include The House by the Cemetery, The Beyond, and City of the Living Dead. The Beyond is by far the best made and the most coherent of the three. City of the Living Dead has the most memorable effects sequence of the three. The House by the Cemetery has the warmest place in my heart, because a lot of it was shot here in New England.
Oh, I love stuff like that.
The actual house by...
So I love Stephen King movies, too.
The actual house is...
based on Stephen King books.
The exteriors of it. The interiors were shot in a studio in Rome, obviously. But the exteriors of it were shot in Scituate. This famous old house that's in Scituate. And the rest of the exteriors were shot in the center of Concord, Massachusetts. So you can go and you can see these locations.
Yeah.
And just be like, oh, this is where all this stuff went on. And it's like, it's neat to think that this, you know, Italian horror movie, which has this infamous reputation, was shot in nice communities in Massachusetts.
Yeah, totally. Well, and that's, like I said, like, I really like, I like that concept of when they use real exteriors as opposed to, like, you know, I remember going on the Warner Brothers studio tour when I was 15, and realizing that the Gilmore Girls, all of it was this staged, made-up community. Whereas, you
same know, town from Gremlins.
Yeah, well, where, yeah.
And Back to the Future, and...
Well, whereas, like, I remember Nightmare on Elm Street, those two houses are actually across the street from each other, and they're actually, they're not on Elm Street.
No, they're in Venice.
But, no, they're in, what do you call it? Not Echo Park, but right before Echo Park.
No, they're closer to Venice.
No, I've been there before. I promise you.
It's not Echo Park.
Not Echo Park. They're off of, what's that main drag? You know, it's like, there's Hollywood, and then there's Sunset, and then the next, like, main one.
It's Franklin,
the,
isn't
the
it?
One that, yeah, the one that the Black Dahlia house is on.
Yeah, I think it's Franklin.
Franklin, yeah, they're off of Franklin. But they're there.
Yeah.
They're houses that people live in.
I've seen
them. And they look exactly the same.
Well, they're way smaller.
Yeah, they look the same as, like, that's the thing is when you see them in person, it's the same, like, I went there the same day that I went to all of the Modern Family houses, and I remember getting to Jay and Gloria's house and being like, it's so close to the street.
Yeah.
Like, and to the house next to it. And this is so weird. But I know what you mean. I love when you can just go and see these places. Though it can be annoying as well. Like, when I saw The Departed, and there's a scene where they, it's supposed to be that they're meeting up in Dorchester under a bridge. But or they're meeting up in Southie under a bridge, and it's actually the bridge between Quincy and Dorchester, and they're on the Quincy side. And I just looked being like, I drive over that bridge like every day. Any Bostonian is gonna know that this is bull. But so my next one, let's see.
WMFO Medford. They like it when I say that.
They do.
Top five. We're down to our top five horror movies that you should
top
watch.
Five.
We'll put these on tonight.
This one, I mean, obvious choice, but necessary to mention, Halloween.
Oh, yeah. Number two for me.
Like, I was going to say, Halloween, absolutely, like, I mean, obviously, like, sequel after sequel after sequel, but the first, the original Halloween, there's a reason they made so many sequels, because that movie is the perfect combination of building suspense and straight up horror. And I like too that they put so much thought into the backstory, like the origin of Michael Myers, like and it was interesting. I remember watching the Rob Zombie interpretation of it, which was a little too gory for my taste.
Yeah.
But I still thought I respected it for the sheer fact that he definitely, that was what made him want to do that in the first place.
That movie gets a bad rap, and I want to say I like some of what Rob Zombie did with that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I thought the backstory of the Myers family.
I was going to say, he developed upon the original concept from I believe it came out in 1978?
Halloween, 1978.
Yeah, 1978. But he definitely stayed true to even though he did his own interpretation of it, he stayed true to the original concept of, like, Michael Myers' backstory. And I thought it was very interesting, too.
But he also gave you the whole thing about the Myers family being sort of the outcasts in town.
Yeah.
You know, they were like the poor white trash.
Yeah, it's like
living in the nice neighborhood, and it's no one liked them.
Well, and that's the thing, is that he definitely, like, he stuck with the original character development and just expanded upon it. But I do, like, I love, too, that, I mean, as the rest of the movies that I'm about to speak about, as a lot of the rest of the movies I'm about to speak about also did, it was definitely one of those movies that lent itself to establishing, like, the rules of a horror movie. So, like, you know, like, the slutty girl's gonna die. The proper virgin is going to be our hero. So many things, like going out back wearing just a men's shirt, probably not a good idea.
Yeah.
Like things like that. Like, it was one of the things that established all of what has become stereotypical horror rules.
For my money, the sequence where Jamie Lee Curtis is banging on the door, trying to get in the house as Michael is coming across the street.
Oh, yes, I love it.
And she's relying on a couple of six-year-olds to save her, is one of the scariest things imaginable.
Because oh, yeah.
You think, because when you see that, you're like, wait a minute. Your only hope is these kids.
Yeah.
And these kids, like, what are they going to do? What are they going to do? They're not even waking up. Like, what are these kids going to do?
Well, and again, like we were talking about before, I love I'd much prefer a horror movie like that than, like, Sharknado or something like that. I think that there's something, regardless of how well made the film is, there's something that just presents into yourself from the very beginning a sense of fear, like I said, regardless of anything, just based on the fact that it could actually happen. There could be some guy who killed his sister when he was a kid, broke out of his mental institution, yeah, and came back for revenge.
Halloween.
That's totally possible.
Halloween is interesting because the movie is basically very simple. It is a movie about the killer moving closer and closer and closer to the victim until he actually touches her.
Yeah.
That's all Halloween is. And there's other stuff going on around it, but that's all the movie is.
And they definitely, that's the other thing I wanted to touch upon. Like I said, they invented the rules of horror. They definitely also invented the concept of the quick look out the window. I see the scary guy. Something distracts me. I look out the window again and he's gone.
Yep.
And that happens probably 5 times over the course of that movie. And every time it's like perfect. Like when he's next to the bushes, that actually, I was reading an article the other day that was saying the scariest 10 stills from horror movies of all time, him standing next to the bushes was number 3.
Yeah. And especially when you get to the bushes and there's no one there.
And yeah. Like, and it's like, where'd he go?
That guy moves fast. Number 5 for me, throw the rules out, Suspiria. Folks, if you haven't seen it, it is the most relentless motion picture ever made. This film, and by the way, go out, get the new Blu-ray version of it that's got the new 4K transfer. It is gorgeous. Basically, if it isn't the music, it's the lighting. If it's not the music or the lighting, it's the sound effects. If it's not the sound effects, it's the visuals. There is something jarring at you through every single second of this motion picture. You get like
you will not fall asleep.
You get like a minute to catch your breath at the beginning and a minute to catch your breath at the end. And then everything in between is just continually attacking you. It is brilliant. It is brilliant. It is a gothic witch story as experimental cinema done by Dario Argento, who is one of the great horror masters of all time. I cannot recommend it enough. It is worth it for the opening kill sequence alone, which is one of the great murder set pieces in Hollywood history.
I can't believe I haven't seen this movie.
Oh my God, you have got to see Suspiria. You have got
Suspiria.
To see it. Don't see the new one.
See the original.
Go see the original.
I always see the original before I see the new one.
Yeah.
And 9 times out of 10, like I said, except for Texas Chainsaw Massacre, 9 times out of 10, I like the original better. Well, since I stole one of yours, I'll cut mine down to 9.
No. Keep going.
Can I?
Yeah, there may be overlap here. That's cool.
Friday the 13th.
I did not have that one, but talked about that last week. The only true American giallo.
That's the thing is that it's when I was talking about that, I love like cheesy, campy horror movies. They invented the term campy horror movie.
Yes.
But again, like Halloween, it reinforces the classic rules of horror. But I also, I have another one on the list that's similar. There are times where you're like, this is kind of a happy-go-lucky movie. Look at all these like young camp counselors going to get ready for a wonderful summer. Like, there are some scenes where you're like, this is actually really cute. And then it's like, nope, he's going to get stabbed through a bunk bed. But it plays right into the, and also, like Halloween, lent itself to, I don't know, 5,000 sequels.
Yeah.
But I like, especially the twist at the end. I think that it, for my knowledge, one of the things I really like about it is that it is perhaps the first horror movie where... A first horror movie about a serial murderer where the murderer ends up being a woman. And not just that, a middle-aged, rather small woman.
Well, that's how you know it was inspired by the Italians. That's one of the dead giveaways right there that you're watching a giallo.
Well, that's what I mean. Another movie I'm going to mention also has a woman as the killer, but it's a different movie. But I did love that like giant twist at the end, and especially... that is for my number one, spoiler alert, that is a question that someone gets wrong in my number one favorite scary movie, which when they say, like, who's the killer in Friday the 13th, she goes, Jason, it was Jason, it was Jason. He goes, I'm sorry, that's the wrong answer.
The wrong answer, yep. Number four for me is George Romero's classic Dawn of the Dead.
Dawn of the Dead's pretty dope.
You can talk about Night of the Living Dead and how important that movie is all day long, but Dawn of the Dead is an evolution of everything that Romero set up in Night of the Living Dead. It is brilliant satire. Dawn of the Dead is a comedy, and you have to understand. It is a comedy about the end of the world and about... the ridiculous lengths that people are going to go to try and survive, and to try and take over, and to try and do everything else. And it is just brilliant satire from beginning to end that happens to have some of the bloodiest gore effects you are ever going to see. Even by today's standard, a lot of them hold up.
Well, and that's...
it's Tom
Savini. It's just like what I was saying, where it's like the best horror movies are ones that give you a bunch of different elements of stuff. It's not just, body parts flying everywhere for an hour and a half. There's satire, there's comedy, there's even perhaps romance, or like, you know, like that when it brings in all these elements that make it really well-rounded.
And the thing about it is, if Romero had played the film straight, no one would have wanted to see it.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Because it would have been too much. It would have been too horrifying. But because he goofs around with it and because they're all having fun making this thing, it's a joy to watch. And again, another film where the commentary still stands up 30, 40 years later.
That's the key. Well, here's my second Stephen King adaptation on the list, which is Carrie.
Brian De Palma version?
The original.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good movie.
Oh, it's...
good movie.
So, and a lot of people, there are people who get
mad.
They're
all going to laugh at you.
They're all going to laugh at you. Well, there's a lot of... and that, again, like the scene when they all have gym detention. Like, you laugh. And you're like, wait, I thought I was watching a horror movie. But it's weird. Like, a lot of people... I've read the book. A lot of people have not and have just seen the movie. The book, it ends up, she burns down the entire state of New Hampshire.
Yeah.
But a lot of people have a problem with the way that Brian De Palma interpreted it. But I think that given, especially given the technology at the time in terms of like special effects and things like that, I think that it was a really good adaptation. And it definitely, it's a good example of when you actually feel bad for the villain. Like Carrie, up and like straight through to the end of the movie, even while she's killing everybody, I just feel terrible for her. And I think it's so fitting too. They nailed the like last gasp in that movie, where when Sue's having a dream that she's walking up to put flowers on Carrie's grave, and Carrie reaches up and grabs her hand. Like that is like the perfect like. I thought it was done being scared.
Jason was added to Friday the 13th precisely because of that scene.
That I was going to say, because of like when reaching up onto the boat.
Because everybody was like, oh my God, that was the greatest thing I've ever seen. And when they were doing Friday the 13th, they were like, we need something like that.
Yeah.
What can we do? And but it's like,
I like I said, I really like horror movies with character development. Like Piper Laurie's, at least a little bit.
Piper Laurie's performance in that movie as Carrie's mom is ridiculous. Good.
She is like terrifyingly believable. And I love too that even through the entire thing, I just think she looks kind of like redheaded Stevie Nicks. or I don't know if it's Stevie Nicks I'm thinking of, or is Stevie Nicks, who's the head of Fleetwood Mac?
Stevie Nicks.
Yeah, okay. Stevie Nicks.
She looks Nicks like, and Christine McVie.
She looks like a redheaded Stevie Nicks in that movie. But she, like she's eerily believable. Mm. And just the sheer, like I love the moment when she's trying to get Carrie not to go to prom. And Carrie's just telling her like, I'm going, like leave me alone. And she uses, you know, she's telekinetic. She uses her telekinesis to like throw her mother onto the bed, and she looks so perfectly like stunted. It's really amazing.
Number three for me, these got silly as they went on, but the first one, Nightmare on Elm Street.
I can't believe that I forgot to include that on mine, even though I was literally just talking about
it. The opening credits sequence for that movie is terrifying. And this is like Wes Craven had already made some of the scariest and most disturbing movies of all time.
Oh, yeah.
And there, he borrows elements from Hills Have Eyes and from Last House on the Left and puts them back into Nightmare on Elm Street. And it just works because at the time... Yeah. That's the only movie I ever nearly walked out of in the theater because I was too scared. At the time, the visual effects that he was using were state of the art.
Like, I wouldn't say like unheard of.
State of the art. And the things that he was doing, I mean, it's not just that that film builds up a tremendous amount of tension with this sort of omnipotent dream demon coming after, you know, innocent little Heather Langenkamp. Yeah. But it's the way that Freddy is able to move in that space.
Yeah.
You know, he's stepping out from behind trees and people are climbing walls.
I'm saying Robert Englund, just his body type is so perfect for that role.
The stairs are giving out under Nancy's feet. It's all nightmare imagery.
I'm saying she is the perfect. I mean, Jamie Lee Curtis is the perfect victim of a horror movie, but she is a close second. Yeah. Like, you just look at that girl when she cries and when she's getting so upset, you're like, you were made to do this.
But then at the end of it, when she turns and she's like, all right, I gotta take care of myself. Yeah, I'm gonna, like, you buy it. She's believable.
Badass. Yeah. Well, and I love her. One of my favorite things about that movie is that in the opening credits, it says, and introducing Johnny Depp. And I always think it's Wes Craven being like, ha, 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 I found him first. Yeah. And I think that like he purposely did it that way because he knew this kid was going to be super famous. Yeah. And by the way, Johnny Depp's death scene in that movie is one of, like, I have nightmares about it. Just the amount of blood. It's absurd. Like, it's, God, that movie is so good.
Apparently, they almost killed some people on the set with that. And the...
It's not surprising. I mean, what's his name? The son of the Kung Fu... why can't I think of it?
Jason Lee.
Jason Lee. Thank you. He died on the set of Black Crow.
Yep.
And because of a false dummy bullet.
Well, in this case, the blood nearly, like...
Like drowned people?
No, nearly shorted out all the electrical equipment.
Oh my God.
And people were like standing on the set and things started sparking and everybody just sort of like ran away.
Oh my God.
The MPAA also made them cut that scene. They were going to give it an X rating. And the original version of that scene is, I think, 5 seconds longer of just the blood pouring out of the bed.
That's crazy. Well, as you know, in Kill Bill, that's the reason that one of the scenes is in black and white, because the FCC said, like, we can't have that much blood without giving it an X rating. Oh my God, that's so funny. Well, my number two, kicking it old school, Psycho.
Good movie.
Yeah, and not the stupid Vince Vaughn version, the original version.
If you tuned in last week, you know this is where a lot of this began. Psycho is seminal. Psycho is where it all starts.
Like the original horror movie, or at least like, and that's why like I was talking about Hitchcock at the beginning of the show, and that's Hitchcock, master of suspense. He invented suspense, and what I think is so wonderful about Psycho, first of all, it's terrifying and very edge of your seat. They never show a knife going penetrating.
Nope.
They never show any gore beyond
the blood
going down the drain, which, by the way, is Bosco chocolate syrup. But it's, I mean, he invented the concept of, and again, with character development, it's like, and Janet Leigh, she was only on set for 3 weeks. That's how long it took to film her segment. She ended up writing about how horrible Hitchcock was to her.
Yeah.
And Hitchcock responded by saying, I wanted her to be scared and freaked out the entire time we were filming. Mission accomplished. But even things that are so minute were thought about. Like when it was one of the first movies to see a woman in her bra on screen as well. But before she does the terrible deed of stealing the money from her boss, she's wearing a white bra. And then suddenly the next time we see her changing clothes after she's stolen the money, she's wearing a black bra. And it's very, there's like so many little bits of minutia in that. Like the detail and the thought that goes into so many things about that movie. It's really, it's remarkable. And even just, I love the scene when they're having, I think they're having sandwiches together. And Norman says what I think is probably the most famous line from the movie, which is, we all go a little mad sometimes. But it's the encapsulation of everything that makes a horror movie good.
Now, the Italians took Psycho and said, take all the women's clothes off, splash blood all over the place. Now you have a movie. And this is what got us to the slashers.
Yeah.
And there is a very short distance between Psycho and the Italians starting to do that. And then between the Italians and the slashers. So it is a landmark horror film. It is one of the most important horror films ever made.
Yeah. It's like how I was just talking to somebody about last night. They said they didn't like the Beatles. And I was like, okay, even if you don't like the Beatles' music, which is absurd in and of itself, you have to at least respect the fact that they made it possible for Led Zeppelin and Green Day and Pink Floyd and all these other bands to exist just by the groundwork that they laid. And that's what Psycho is.
Yeah.
Even if you don't like the movie Psycho, like you don't want to sit down and watch it as your movie night, you have to respect all of the things that it made possible.
And you can make an argument that the second act and most of the third act of Psycho are poorly paced.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, Psycho,
because the first act ends with the shower scene.
Exactly, which is perhaps the most famous scene in horror history. I actually went to, when we were kids, we went to, the house is located at Universal Studios in Florida. But they have like the actual, like the Bates Motel and the Bates Mansion. It's weird because you walk up and it looks exactly like it does in the movie. And it's like, wait, but there's that giant silver globe in the fountain behind us. Like, this is strange. But yeah, I agree. Like, I mean, the parts with Janet Leigh are definitely like the most iconic, and the rest of the movie does go much more slowly, but it's, for the first time anyone ever did anything like that, it's pretty solid.
My number two, we have talked about, that is Halloween.
Yeah.
So we move right on to your
number one.
Number one.
It's going to be controversial, but I stand by it. all of the screams, particularly 1 and 4. And here's why. You were talking about Dawn of the Dead and how it's a satire for in a big part. Scream, the Scream movies lean into that they're a giant joke. Like, they totally, they make a very measured effort to absolutely acknowledge that. But at the same time, they are scary. But they're scary in an approachable, manageable way. Like, you sit there being like, yeah, this is, I mean, this is absurd. They basically, all of the stereotypes about horror movies, they use that as, it's almost like a comedy act. Like, it's like they use that as material. Like, they have, like, the dumb masks. They have him walking remarkably slow. And then sometimes he'll run and trip and fall down. Like, it's... And it's always, and they have the twist of finding out who the murderers actually are and thinking like, oh, I think it's this guy. No, wait, it can't be this guy. Is it this guy? Oh, I think it's that guy. Like it, and you know, like the pretty main character who has a dark secret.
Neve Campbell is at peak yum in that movie.
That is like mid I would say all three of the first movies is like mid Party of Five Neve Campbell. And they actually borrow the, at least the first one borrows from what Hitchcock established, like we were just talking about, having someone that is cast like, you know, top billed cast dying in like the first 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Which that's ironically the first time I saw that movie, I grew up loving Drew Barrymore, and I begged my mom to let me see it. She found out what it was about and was like, absolutely not. And you know, she's even on the cover. You think she's going to be in the whole movie. And then my friend Jessica, her parents were those parents that have HBO and don't put blocks on. You know what I mean? Like, they just kind of let the kids do whatever. So we were 10 years old and watched that movie on HBO. And I remember Drew Barrymore's death being like, no, but no. But it's stupid, but they know it's stupid.
Yeah.
So it makes it, and I don't know if you've seen the fourth one.
I've seen all four.
I think the third one's the worst, the second one's second worst, but then the first and the fourth are great. And I like the fourth, they purposely did it a decade later to incorporate the technological advances.
Right.
But it's such a classic concept that they, if they weren't acknowledging how cheesy and ridiculous they were being, I'd say that it was crap. But the fact that they're like, yeah, we know this is dumb, but it's like the best kind of dumb.
We're going to come back and I'm going to give you my my number one. And after that, on the tell, Mikey D brings you everything you need to know about the Boston music scene tonight at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
I need to remind you, it is Donations Drive 2018. Go to donate.wmfo.org. Go to donate.wmfo.org. You can donate any amount from $1 up to the winning lottery ticket from last week. And we will gladly accept that.
And the more you donate, the more you get.
The more you donate, the more stuff we send you. And a reminder, the nuclear option available only for the big picture. If you donate the full $5,000 that we're hoping to raise, you can take this program off the air. It is the big picture. We will be back in just a minute with my favorite horror movie of all time here on WMFO Medford.
Hey everybody, Jamie Lee Curtis here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. What should you do to stop a friend from driving if they've been drinking? Answer, whatever it takes. Think before you drink. Designate before you celebrate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Yeah.
WMFO Medford. 91.5 FM, the sugar has gotten to Shea Spillane.
It has indeed.
Did you, I got to throw this.
As has the hermaphrodite rumor about Jamie Lee Curtis.
I got to throw this one out quickly. Not true, by the way. Jamie Lee debunked that herself.
What did she like? Take a selfie?
No. Someone asked her about it. She was like, no, that's not what happened. Did you hear about the guy in Indiana who dressed up his 5-year-old as Hitler?
No, but oh my God.
We are only in this for living history, he said. And he was like, he's dressed up as a soldier and his kid's dressed up like Hitler. They get the Nazi armbands and he's like, I didn't expect everybody, this is what he said exactly. Not everybody has the devotion to history I have. I'm sorry, I feel like I've hurt a lot of people. I'd do anything to make it right.
You want to have devotion to history? Dress your kid up as Abraham Lincoln.
But I think this is like genuinely clueless American dude.
Oh yeah,
who's totally. Like, oh wait, that's bad? It's like, yeah dude, where have you been for the last like 74 years.
Yeah, but it was just millions of Jewish people. What's the big deal?
Hitler equals bad. That's we all agree on this.
Oh my God.
All right, so we were talking about our favorite.
I would say we're at Derek's number
movies.
One.
Number one for me, all time. Whenever I want to scare myself silly, I will put this on. Stanley Kubrick, Stephen King, The Shining.
The Shining.
The Shining.
That is the second one that I left off because I knew you would have it on yours. That movie is brilliant.
Here's the thing about The Shining. And there's some videos out there that talk about this. One of the great theories about The Shining is that there are no ghosts. There's no ghosts in the movie. And there's different explanations for how this may be. But really, what The Shining is about, and the first thing you need to understand about that movie is that that movie is told entirely from Danny's perspective.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Even when you're seeing his dad, when you're seeing Jack in other places, it's still told from Danny's perspective. This is a movie about an alcoholic father who beats his family.
Yeah.
And what is the worst possible thing you can do in that situation? Oh, let's go hole ourselves up in an abandoned hotel for 5 months. Danny knows what's coming.
Yeah.
Danny knows what's going to happen.
I would say, before they even leave, like, you can see, and what I like, too, is that he doesn't really speak. It's all done through implication.
So
it's all done, you get it from the expressions on his face and from his reactions to people touching him and things like that.
So you can look at all of these ghosts that you see and all of these manifestations as Danny's psyche,
like symbolic,
coming unhinged, because he knows, like, he's been hurt by Jack once, and he knows it's coming. And on the other side of it, you've got Wendy, who's just like, she knows too, but she thinks she's going to be in control. She's going to ride it out.
Yeah, like, oh, this is going to make things better. This is going to make things better, which is classic abused wife. A classic abused wife thought process of like, okay, well, we'll do this and he'll relax and everything's going to be fine.
Yeah. But the heart of this movie is an examination of a totally dysfunctional family where the father is beating the wife and the child.
Yeah.
That's the core of it. And it is probably one of the most realistic depictions you will ever see on screen of that family dynamic.
Well, and Kubrick actually... you know, I read way too much about movies, but Kubrick actually took a cue from Alfred Hitchcock with Janet Leigh, where he mentally and verbally abused, what's her name?
Shelley Winters,
the entire time to keep that fear that real.
Yeah.
And last thing I'll say about it, here's Johnny. It was an off-the-cuff line.
Total improv.
Yep.
Total improv. Unbelievable film. There's a little...
Jack Nicholson, like, was scary good in that
movie. Jack Nicholson does a little homage to Leatherface at the end of that film in the maze. Watch for it, and you'll see it. That is all the time that we've got. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween, everybody.
Stay safe. Watch out for those little ghosts.